AM 770 KTTH. It is the Jason Rantz Show. Brian Suits in here for a getaway Wednesday, which is, I think I'm the first person to ever call the day before Thanksgiving that. Let's go around the room. Me? We're going to two different families. Both within about 10 miles where we live. Producer Darren, what's your big plan?
Going to my grandparents' house in Issaquah.
What are you, 12?
Been doing it with my grandparents my whole life.
And I apologize. Because the other day, I forgot. It's Todd's producer. It's Todd Herman's producer, who's a fellow Cougar. I just simply assumed, because you're such a cool guy.
Yeah, right.
That
exactly.
You must be you. When was the last time you traveled? You got on a plane.
For Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
I do every other year. We go to Maui as a family.
Does that count?
I'm not sure. Because we go for an extended period, so we leave before the holiday rush, and we get back after it.
My big revelation was discovering that if you're flying somewhere for Thanksgiving, fly on Thanksgiving Day. I mean, I know we're on the West Coast, and it's, you know, hard to get east, but most people do Thanksgiving like at 3 p.m., 4 p.m. I've only gone up and down the West Coast, and what I found is 8 a.m. flight on Thanksgiving Day, and there's no one there. There's no lines, no nothing. Don't pack a bag. Just take a carry-on, and it's like some of the easiest holiday flying that you will ever do. That's just a little heads up for me. Also, it's cheaper because I don't know why people don't fly on Thanksgiving Day, but it is just cheaper. And that's my little insider tip. Here's what I know about living in. I was born in the islands and grew up on Oahu until I was about 11. Before we moved to Port Angeles, my Canadian relatives would always come to us for Christmas. You know, obviously December in Vancouver is just like Seattle, and if you can get away to Oahu and you don't have to pay for a hotel, you do it. So they would always glom onto us. The McLeods of Vancouver would always come out to Oahu. And my mom was always a little, they would also do it sometimes in late November. And they would always say, well, yeah, we're, you know, we want to make it in time for Thanksgiving. And I didn't think anything of it because I think, you know, Thanksgiving is Thanksgiving. It's the third Thursday in November. Everyone on earth knows that. In Peru, that's when they do it. In Singapore, that's when they do Thanksgiving. Turns out Thanksgiving is a uniquely American holiday for third Thursday in November. My Canadian relatives were coming up for American Thanksgiving. Canada already had their Thanksgiving.
I think it's earlier in the month, isn't it?
No, it's October.
It's in October.
Yeah. So they were just totally scamming us. It took me years to figure that out. And it was sort of an inside joke that they would come whenever they wanted to, you know, come to our house. But that's how I knew when it was Christmas. All right. So today, big stories today. And I absolutely will validate anyone who feels like ignoring the news today. But the big story out of the White House yesterday was the president evidently personally dictating a letter announcing that there will be no sanctions on Saudi Arabia. The CIA has determined that the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, is the guy who ordered the killing of a Saudi citizen who worked for the Washington Post, killed him on Turkish soil. What can America do about it? Not a heck of a lot, except maybe sanctions. But it was a 1-2 punch yesterday. The president released a statement that really was unique in the world of foreign policy. It clearly was Trump dictation. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo just laid out in the most realistic terms I've ever seen someone talk about. He said, look, it is a mean, nasty world out there, and a nuclear Iran trumps, if you'll pardon the expression, trumps a op-ed writer who was murdered in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. And so that's how they laid it out. The president said, here's just a little bit of what he said in his letter, quote, America first, exclamation point. The world is a very dangerous place, exclamation point. And then he goes on with a whole bunch of exclamation points. He says, it could very well be that the Crown Prince had knowledge of this tragic event. Maybe he did and maybe he didn't, exclamation point. That being said, we may never know all of the facts surrounding the murder of Mr. Jamal Khashoggi. And both things, by the way, can be possible. As Ben Shapiro was tweeting about this yesterday, saying, you know, it's possible to condemn Saudi Arabia, and it's possible to retain Saudi Arabia as a strategic ally. Here's what the president said on his getaway Tuesday on the way to walking over to Marine One, the helicopter. Oh, wait, that's my bad. Here we go.
We put out a statement on Saudi Arabia, which I guess most of you have seen, and we'll see how that all works out. It's a very complex situation. It's a shame, but it is what it is.
It is what it is, and there you go. Then the president tweeting about an hour ago his pleasure with a lower oil price thing, saying thank you, Saudi Arabia. So more on this a little later on in the morning. I'll explain out our thinking about this. But I got to say, seeing a lot of the shock and the pearl clutching by much of the mainstream media, especially the regular lineup on Morning Joe and MSNBC, of course, they were declaring that statement the least presidential of all time and the whole thing. It was the most refreshing and honest statement I've heard an American president and his Secretary of State make about Saudi Arabia, because anyone who's even a casual viewer of foreign news knows that the United States has been in this really unseemly, abusive relationship with Saudi Arabia for about 50 years, and it's got nothing to do with party. You bet Obama did it. They can couch it any way they want and say, oh yeah, well, Obama put a he delayed the sales of arms to Saudi Arabia. That's all he did. He didn't cancel those foreign military sales. That's all he did. Same with Clinton. You know, Bush held hands with the old king, with King Fahd. You know, and it was really off-putting to Americans. And when the Bush White House said, well, that's a custom in Saudi Arabia. Okay, you're in Crawford, Texas. Okay, make the king of Saudi Arabia put frickin' cowboy boots on and a hat, whatever. But this relationship with Saudi Arabia has been nearly a one-way relationship for a long, long time. And we're a country that gets less than 7% of our oil. It's just that it's not about the oil anymore. It's about the important position that Saudi Arabia has in our foreign policy, because we as a nation, the Obama administration, Bush and Clinton, everyone agreed Iran is not getting a nuclear weapon. And in that part of the world, you can't do that without the assistance of the Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and Kuwait. If they're on your side, and of course they're on our side, they don't want to see a nuke in Iran. And so the president made a blatant calculation, and it boils down to this: the life of a guy who was not an American citizen, but had an American visa, is not worth blowing up a relationship, 75 years in the making, at a time when it's almost more critical than at any time before. So more on that a little later on. Also, we'll talk with Fox News. Coming up here in a couple of minutes about the latest at the border. Yeah, the Mexican police in Tijuana PD are rounding up the so-called caravan people, and they're holding them. Wait till you hear what they're holding them for, coming up here in just a bit. And also the story that, I don't know why this fascinates me, but here's the headline. U.S. tourist killed by arrow-shooting Indian tribe. And I'm not talking about casino Americans. There was an American tourist who was in the Indian Ocean on a trip, and he asked to be sent to a remote island where outsiders are not allowed to visit, because it's inhabited by a tribe that has not been in contact with the modern world ever. And so we'll tell you how that wound up. And guess what? Some Amazon employees who knew that they were going to be transferred to the HQ2 in New York City made some real estate decisions before the news broke. Did they break the law or not? The answer may not surprise you. And then, of course, the outbreak of soft serve racism, a sparsely attended news conference yesterday. We'll have some highlights for Mr. Byron Ragland, who is, according to his own words, trying to put his life back together. And a raucous city hall at Kirkland. AM 770 KTTH. It is Jason Rance's show. Brian Suits filling in. Jason is on the vacation, and he'll be back after Thanksgiving. All right, Fox News joins us. The situation in Tijuana is not getting a heck of a lot better, and the Ninth Circuit Court chimes in. Thanks for joining us. Let's start with Ninth Circuit Court. So what exactly did they say yesterday? You can't just jump the wall and shout asylum anymore, or you can jump the wall and shout asylum. Ninth Circuit Court says that you can just jump the fence and shout asylum. And then also, the tension is rising in Tijuana, Rachel. So help us out here. What's going on down there?
Well, that's right.
We're having problems
on the border in San Diego, saying that over the fence there that they have, where there's barbed wire and so on. She said there's about 6,200 people just kind of hanging out there. Some have had tried to scale the fence. Some have there's been some clashes in Tijuana, and so. This is a developing problem. She says it's a real crisis, even though some have questioned the seriousness of all this. She says that this is a real crisis. She's telling the migrants that they're not going to come in illegally. And she did respond to that Ninth Circuit decision, the judge blocking President Trump's proclamation that anyone who comes in other than through an official port of entry will not be able to apply for asylum. She says the administration is going to appeal that decision, but while it's in effect right now, they will comply.
And I don't know, the Ninth Circuit is famously the most overturned circuit, but it also moves slowly, and so we may not see a change there. Did the administration argue or point out that this caravan had five or six opportunities in cities in Mexico to claim asylum? If they really want asylum, you don't have to do it at the border. There's the closest one is 50 miles inside of Mexico, but oddly enough, they walked right past all of those.
That's interesting, too. And, yeah, you make that point. And then also, they could have gone to McAllen, Texas, which is a lot closer. That's an official port of entry there. And claimed asylum. So it's interesting that they decided to go all the way to Tijuana, which much, much farther, and then camp out there. If I were in that caravan, you'd think you want to split off from the group so you could get processed more quickly. They don't know how long it's going to take. I've heard that they're going to try to wrap up the troops' mission there, freeing up Border Patrol agents to do this processing by Christmas. I mean, that's a tall order when you're talking about processing what could amount to about 10,000 people.
Then meanwhile, on the other side of the border, Tijuana PD have dozens of the caravan's overwhelmingly male, men in their 20s. They have dozens of men behind bars. What are you hearing from that side of the border?
That's right, Brian. Yeah, absolutely. There have been some clashes on that side of the border. There have been, I believe, some arrests. There have been rocks being thrown because of this kind of the angry protest there. There are folks, if you're living in Tijuana, that you don't like it. In fact, some of the caravan folks have clashed with people who live in Tijuana. And so they're not liking what's happening to their town, apparently. I mean, if you're living there and suddenly, upwards of 6,000 people just plop into your town, that's pretty rough. The mayor of Tijuana had threatened to deport some of these folks. I don't know exactly how they're going to do that. But they're saying there that there'd be zero tolerance for any conduct that violates law and social order, and that protecting the safety of Tijuanans is a top priority. So this is officials there in that city. I mean, because you can see some video of things just getting kind of out of control with some clashes and like I said, them trying to scale this border wall, which has barbed wire on top of it. But yeah, if you're living there, you can just imagine what that would be like.
And the mayor said they're going to deport them because it turns out it's illegal to cross without permission into Mexico, and they have a federal immigration department. They're going to call the feds on their own detainees they're going to send them back to Honduras. No protests, yeah, well, no free lawyers, no nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that's every nation has got its immigration laws, and people do complain about the United States immigration laws. And it seems like everybody, both the left and the right, they seem to agree that immigration reform is needed. And you know that they tried it earlier this year, Democrats and Republicans almost coming to some kind of an agreement on wall funding and a fix for people brought here illegally by their parents, their children who were here illegally, not to their own fault. That fell through. The president was hoping that the lame duck Congress would do something about it, but that's highly unlikely because they are a lame duck. So, the question of what's going to happen with these 6,500 people or so on in Tijuana, unclear.
All right, Rachel Sutherland, stay away from the romaine and have a good Thanksgiving.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah, throw out your romaine. Yep.
Yeah, toss it out and have a good Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining us.
You too.
All right, there she goes, Rachel Sutherland. We'll be back right after this. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rance. I'll give you the latest in this story about a 27-year-old American tourist named John Chow. He's dead, and he was killed by an ancient people who you're not supposed to interact with. Killed by bow and arrow. Right after this on AM 770 KTTH. Brian Suits filling in for Jason. Jason will be back right after his vacation time to, it's not time to get. You'll get your traffic in a second. We'll be back right after this, AM 770 KTTH. AM 770 KTTH. It is a Jason Rance show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rance. We'll get to soft serve racism. This is something that is really blown out of proportion at this point. But that, you know, that's just my white privilege speaking. But we'll get to the great Menchie's Kirkland controversy of 2018. President Trump and American dies by bow and arrow here in just a second. So President Trump yesterday released the statement, and this is the longer walkaway press part that I was talking about. He expanded on the decision that he had to make about, and I'll be honest with you, because the Jamal Khashoggi news is not exactly red hot amongst the American public. You're not even seeing the most ardent human rights above all elected officials in any way be in favor of any kind of binding sanctions on Saudi Arabia. Probably because many of them, and this is sort of the double-edged sword, if you'll pardon the Saudiness about that, of California being all blue is because so much high-tech weaponry, et cetera, is made in Southern California in the districts of, as it turns out, Adam Schiff. And I can't say that without hesitating anymore, just because I have the other tweet, the other spelling on mine. But and so you're not hearing this, well, we should cut off relations with Saudi Arabia. Because at the end of the day, like Trump said, it is what it is. Saudi Arabia is a monarchy, and I'm not talking constitutional monarchy. I'm not talking about Queen Elizabeth, meeting with the newly elected prime minister and then her asking him to form a government. No, it is a dictatorship. It's a hereditary dictatorship. I mean, it's like North Korea. And when the king empowers his son, the crown prince, to do this stuff, you do it. I mean, that's just the way it is. And if you do it, your family is showered with privilege and riches. And that means if it's time to fall on your sword because you screwed up the killing and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi and because the Turks have bugged your consulate, then you do it. You die in a car accident or whatever. The Saudis did this after 9/11. keep in mind, this is not like Game of Thrones. Okay, the king of Saudi Arabia is not sitting there with a flagon of ale, and he has the one daughter over here, and then the dwarf son over here, and then another one. The Saudi royal family are thousands and thousands strong, and they're wealthy. And as it turns out, after 9/11, some of them were involved in the 9/11 plot. That's crystal clear. Some of them physically worked here on American soil. Some of them, one in particular, who met two of the 9/11 hijackers at LAX at Los Angeles International. He was an employee at the Saudi consulate in Los Angeles. And he was recalled back to Saudi Arabia pretty quickly, where he met a untimely end, shall we say. But this is something, this is a feature of Saudi governance, Saudi monarchy. And either you deal with them or you don't. And I've always been a realist. You know what? I love the moral world. The moral world is really, really cool. It's great to live in the moral world. The gap between how you want the world to be and how it is what you have to manage. And I went to war to kick Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. So I restored a monarchy. I mean, that's on me. I volunteered to join the army, and the United States decided it was in our national interest to restore Kuwait to the Kuwaiti royal family, and we did. In the course of doing that, we were defending Saudi Arabia. So this is an extension of this. It's a set. The left dislikes that Trump is saying it in such blunt terms. Here's a little bit of what he said with Marine One warming up in the background.
Well, I have nothing to do with Saudi. Just so you understand, I don't make deals with Saudi Arabia. I don't have money from Saudi Arabia. I have nothing to do with Saudi Arabia. I couldn't care less. And I will tell you, and as most of you know, being president has cost me a fortune, and that's okay with me. I knew that a long time ago. But being president has cost me a fortune. A tremendous fortune like you've never seen before. But someday I'll tell you what that is. But, and I knew that a long time ago, because I don't do deals. I don't do, all I do is focus on this country and making great deals for this country. I don't focus on making great deals for myself because I don't care anymore. So Saudi Arabia has nothing to do with me. What does have to do with me is putting America first. Wait. They're buying hundreds of billions of dollars worth of things from this country. If I say we don't want to take your business, if I say we're going to cut it off, they will get the equipment, military equipment and other things from Russia and China. Russia and China would be very, very happy because right now we're doing very well against China. We're doing very well against everybody.
And let me pause real quick and let me just deliver the truth here about this. That's not true. It's not true whatsoever. The press is too lazy to chase that down, but Saudi Arabia is not turning to Russia or China for the capabilities that they have with the upgraded F-15s, for instance. And he doesn't need to say that. I would rewrite the talking point and simply say that these are pre-approved deals. Our word means something. They're going to come with conditions, you know, et cetera. The Saudis are so deep. And granted, they'll pick and choose countries where they purchase weapons, but by and large, everything is from Britain and the United States. And I mean, overwhelmingly the United States. The Saudis use the M1 tank. And they have upgraded their F-15s out of pocket. And we're not paying for this. It's not any military aid. This isn't like Israel. The Saudis are paying for this stuff. Boeing has upgraded the F-15 to the maximum capabilities of a non-stealth aircraft. The Saudi F-15 is so advanced and so in many ways unique from the most advanced American F-15. It's called the F-15SA for Saudi Arabia. And they upgrade them in Palmdale, California. They fly them out. And it's been so successful that Boeing is now spinning off the Saudi F-15 into what's called the F-15X. That's going to be made in St. Louis and is going to have foreign military sales. So the Saudis are tied into the American defense establishment. That's by design. We have done this since the 70s. The deal that we have made with them, and it's this simple, will protect you if you buy our stuff. The Saudis aren't going to Russia. But if you say something like that to people in the American media, if you speak the truth to people in the American media, especially the ones who slept through international history, they're kind of shocked by the blunt stance, the blunt truth of this. But that's the truth. We have a deal. We're protecting them, and they're buying our stuff. We created NATO, not as a buttress against Stalin, but so that France and Germany don't go to war a third time. That's the truth of NATO. What? So anyway, back to Trump.
Including Russia, and I'm going to keep it that way. And I'm not going to tell a country that's spending hundreds of billions of dollars and has helped me do one thing very importantly, keep oil prices down so that they're not going to $100 and $150 a barrel. Right now, we have oil prices in great shape. I'm not going to destroy the world economy, and I'm not going to destroy the economy for our country by being foolish with Saudi Arabia. So
there you go. I've never heard an American president be as blunt about this. The letter that he wrote yesterday was just as blunt. And that is the way that it is. That's how the world works. And it might be unartful and it might not be articulate, but he's talking to Ohio, you know, and he's talking to Florida and he's talking to Illinois. And this is where a strength of Trump is that he doesn't have, in this particular case, he doesn't have a deep foreign policy background. He understands exactly what the relationship is, and he's not going to turn around and paint it up with flowery language. All right. So American killed by bow and arrow. There are a group of islands. One is called Sentinel Island in the Indian Ocean. Approximately, if you recall your geography, approximately halfway between Malaysia and India. Vast, vast piece of ocean. And there's an island called Sentinel Island. And on this island, there are several tribes of natives who have never had contact with the West. And in fact, by law, the island can't be violated. Tourists can't go there. An American was killed. An American tourist was killed by arrows shot by protected tribesmen living in one of the world's most isolated regions, tucked in India's Andaman Islands. This is according to police in India today. 27-year-old John Chow, Chau. I'm looking for him on social media. He had taken a boat ride with local fishermen before venturing alone in a canoe to the remote North Sentinel Island, where the indigenous people live cut off completely from the outside world. As soon as he set foot on the island, he found himself facing a flurry of arrows, officials told AFP News. Contact with several tribes on the island set deep in the Indian Ocean is illegal in a bid to protect their indigenous way of life. Police have registered a case of murder and seven accused persons have been arrested. You know who was arrested? The fisherman who took him there. Now, they're not. We're trying to find out from other stories. Did they tell him that it was illegal to go to that island? Or did the guy say, well, here's $100 extra. Let me buy a canoe and I'll paddle ashore. And they failed to mention to him, hey, you're going to want to use a bigger paddle. Bring some sunscreen. Oh, and the tribesmen might kill you with a bow and arrow, something. But the question is, who in the right mind, if you knew that, who in the right mind would go there? And the guy's paddling ashore, and he sees men standing there, you know, in thongs or it's naked, according to these pictures, and they're holding bows and arrows. That would be the point where Brian Suits, filling in for Jason Rance, turns around and goes back to the fisherman and says, can you maybe teach me some phrases? Did you know any of their language? Can I borrow a Speedo? Something. Anything. But an American is dead, killed after paddling ashore on remote islands in India. So we'll be back in just a second. We will get to the great racist soft serve controversy of 2018. In just a minute, and more stuff, more national trends, more stories right after this. It is Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rance on AM 770 KTTH. AM 770 KTTH, it is a Jason Rance show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rance, and I have more details on this story coming out of India about an American tourist paid fishermen to illegally ferry him to an island, a protected island that is inhabited by people who have not been in contact with the modern world. And they're barely clothed and they have bows and arrows. And when helicopters fly over, they display them and shoot arrows at the helicopters. So Darren, listen to this deal. So at first from one story, I thought, okay, he paid fishermen just to go to an island. Maybe they mentioned, oh, there's a tribe on there or whatever. Maybe they just wanted his money and didn't tell him or whatever. No, he did know that the island was inhabited by people hostile to outsiders. And he tried to go there on November 14th, but he couldn't make it. So I guess 2 days later, they're saying, just a few days ago, he paid fishermen again to take him there because he's a missionary. He's not, apparently he's not connected to any particular church. He's a Christian, but he fancies himself as his own missionary. And I don't know what the source of the guy's money is or whatever, but he travels the world. So
he was going there to see the tribe. And
he was gonna Bible them up. He doesn't speak a word of their language or anything. He describes himself as the local director general of police, Dipendra Patek, says that the guy described himself as a wilderness EMT, an emergency medical technician, an advanced open water diver, an outbound collective explorer, and a snake bite survivor. And is that a skill? I don't.
Snake bites. Everything else was like a skill or a
talent. Yeah, for that, it seems like you just stand there. And I don't know. And so whatever he's done, he has the money to travel the world. And this is where he sort of fancies himself as a one-man, missionary crew. And so according to the fishermen have been arrested for murder, because it's basically like saying, oh, that cage, that giant yellow cat looking thing. Yeah, it's just like a kitty. Just go in there. But you got to pay me $100. So they said, this is what witnesses say. He tried to reach Sentinel Island on November 14th. 2 days later, he went well prepared. He left the dinghy midway and took a canoe all by himself to the island. He was attacked by arrows, but he continued walking. The fishermen saw the tribals tying a rope around his neck and dragging his body. They were scared and fled, but returned the next morning to find his body on the seashore. And local police say the body's not yet been retrieved because we have to strategize, keeping in mind the nuances and sensitivity of other cultures. We are working on that and are in contact with anthropologists and tribal welfare experts. We will figure out some strategies. So there's the body. And I'm assuming the guy comes ashore, with a backpack full of stuff that maybe they've never seen before. So, I mean, don't be this guy, or maybe he was following his heart or whatever, but he's dead now. And the argument against this is, okay, you're not respecting local law. You've been told that this tribe is going to be left alone in their native state. And you can discuss the morality of that anytime you want. I'll certainly discuss that. But don't go there is the bottom line. And he went there. See, I mean, and I would say, and maybe this makes me not woke. I know I'd like to be a wokey on this, but I'm just one of those people who feel like denying modern medicine, modern governance, and the modern world, intentionally keeping these people in the dark, I don't think that's moral. I think you're treating these people like an ant farm, and it's the same with tribes in the Amazon and all that. They're losing kids in childbirth that they don't have to. They're dying of diseases that we've cured. And then when someone says, well, how do you know that? Well, then let's go and contact them. I don't think you're helping any indigenous people by having them live in squalor in 2018. Because in case none of you have ever been reincarnated or, read a history book, the world of 2018 is the best world we've ever had. And yes, I heard someone say, oh, but what about nuclear weapons or whatever? This is the healthiest, most prosperous world that's ever existed on the face of the earth in our recorded history. That's just that. And with all due respect to the guys running around naked on a beach at Sentinel Island in India, I have no idea if they're happy or sad. I just know this. They don't have antibiotics. They are losing kids in childbirth. They're dying of they're dying in their 40s and 50s of diseases that we've cured, as I repeat myself. And I just think that you're helping. And you know what? Write down their language. Write down their culture. Ours is – this is – by the way, this is – white privilege in a nutshell. So is preaching climate change, global warming to the third world. We're saying, oh, look at these quaint people. And we here in 2018, we're going to keep them as pets. Those people in the Amazon, they're going to run around and get eaten by jaguars because we're not going to give them firearms. They're going to lose children to diseases that they don't have to lose. The women are going to die in childbirth. Maybe slavery exists in some of those tribes. We don't know. But we're not going to interfere with them because we're going to keep them as a terrarium. We're going to keep them as a habit trail so that we'll always know that there's some humans that are living backwards the way that we used to. Meanwhile, all of us in Japan and America and Russia and Belgium and South Africa, we're going to drive internal combustion cars or electric cars. We're going to leave our virtue signal on as we change lanes and all that. That's how I've always felt about this. And I know that anthropologists will always be shocked and say, no, you have to leave them like that. Really? Do you? Do you really have to leave them like that? Well, they'll be exposed to diseases they've never been exposed to. Well, inoculate them. Okay, but I don't think you're doing them a service by keeping them in a filthy, very fatal ancient world. Hour number two, we will get to the great soft serve ice cream controversy of 2018 when we come back. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rantz on AM 770 KT.